good evening. This is Dr. J.P. V. Gerald, and this is Unstandardized English. Not a lot of you are listening. I know that. There was a point when this podcast was like my only outlet away from a job I hated, and now it's just something I do for fun. For the, 100 or 200 of you who listen, thank you for your time. I see people on YouTube put up videos and have like 7 views after like 6 days, and like, that seems sad. I'm glad that a few of you still listen to this. But I got a great one for you today. So I've got my friend, Dr. Caitlin Green, who has been on the show twice, but not for 3 years. And we're just going to catch up, see what she's been working on. We've diverged. She's really stayed on the language beat. And I want to hear what she's discovered in the last 3 years. So we're going to talk about that. I will tell you, my second book, Embracing the Exceptions, Meeting the Needs of Neurodivergent Students of Color, was sent back with no major comments from the publisher. So instead of coming out in 2025, it's going to come out this year at the end of August. We're working on the cover right now, so I'm really excited for you all to see it. This one is not an academic book, so anyone listening to this should be able to comprehend it and share it with people. It's a personal book. There's a lot of stories about my own experience in school. And I collected stories from other neurodivergent students of color. And I think it could really make a difference. All right? Okay. It's Unstandardized English. We deal with the racially, linguistically, and neurologically minoritized. All right. On to the conversation.
I will, just to be safe. Although it works just fine. I don't really get a chance to, especially all my like early pandemic people who are, individuals to catch up, because I'm not on the social medias as much as I used to be.
I know this.
Well, I think part of it is that in late, I don't know when it was, I realized it was making me angry, which it does, right? And I went through a challenging period unrelated to that. When I was doing too many things. I was finishing. I can hear myself, by the way. it's echoing over there, so I can hear myself.
Oh, no. Is there something I can do to fix that?
No, I don't know. It was just funny. I'm just like, what does that sound? I'm like, oh, it's me. so I was like, I really wanted to get out of my job, but I also knew that, like, I can't get out of my job and get a job where my degree would be valued unless I know I'm going to finish, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have to be able, you can't say, oh, I'm going to get a doctorate in 2 years. Yeah, a lot of people are going to get a doctorate in 2 years. At that point, all you did was take classes. You know, that's the easy part. It's the do the dissertation part that people don't do, right? Yeah. I've seen people who are not students at all anymore have ADD in their like email signature, and I'm like, so you just like, saying you didn't do it then?
Like, yeah.
You just didn't do it, which is fine, but like, it's not like a title.
Right.
And I wanted a job where it doesn't necessarily have to be required, but I wanted it to be valued, not the title necessarily, although they do value that now that I have the job, but like the training that it entails, right? The things that I have learned, right? And so I had to wait until I'm like, okay, I'm definitely going to finish, right? So that was like, once I had finished the data collection, which was about 4 months before I finished I wrote the thing pretty fast. You know, I'd go very quickly. I wrote the whole thing over like Christmas break, in 21 to 22. And so I said, all right, I'm definitely going to finish. So I think I can start really looking for a job and like putting it on there like I'm about to finish. You know, it's going to take a few months to get a job. So in that period, I cannot be scrolling to social media and just getting mad because I guess it's too much to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I still have social media. I did not take everything off, but I made it harder for me to get to on my phone. Just right. That extra step. Like, it's not on the front screen. Now I have to go in there and go over there and so forth, right? And yeah. I also don't get push notifications. I get the little heart when somebody likes it, right? But that's not, you know.
You don't need somebody, to go look at that.
Right, exactly. And if somebody messages me, I do see that, which is how I was talking to you before and lots of other people. But, like, I'm not just on there because I spend 3 minutes on there and I'm just like, no, you can't just say that because you didn't cite the – but that's not true. And I'm just like, no. And even when I agree with them, I'm like, if you say things that I agree with but you don't cite it, you are not actually helping. You know, it's where people who should know better is the thing, because the people we follow tend to be people who should know better. But yeah, they're doing things emotionally, which I understand the emotion of it, but, like, the, you know, the correlation causation thing just happens so often. Yeah. It's, you know, yeah, especially with things that, like, where it's very clear, they're saying, like, things like, you know, study says, and I'm like, you know better! You do!
Yeah.
The study doesn't say that, or else it wouldn't have been published. And I know there's bad studies published, but, like, it also wouldn't say that, you know?
Yeah.
Which is to say that I haven't had a chance to actually talk to you in a while, but it seems like you've been up to stuff. You're still on there because you've made a, you've, like, purposefully been using it, right? So now people pay, like, attention to you on the...
Yeah, I've been trying.
The artist formerly
I don't have, like, an institution behind me, so that's my next best thing.
Well, are you still editing? Like, you're doing stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm doing stuff. And our chapter just came out in the Oxford Inclusion and Linguistics book. And
that's cool.
So we've been talking to people about that, so that's nice.
Yeah, have you all done, yeah, like, some virtual talks and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And some in-person ones, though. Mostly I make Riker do those because I can't travel very much.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you only had to go to, like, somewhere on the West Coast or something, you know.
Right, I can do, like, that, yeah.
You know, it's like if I had to go to, like, D.C., like, I can go there and come back same day if I need to. Probably, yeah, one night, you know. Well, that's cool because, like, I think that back when we were first doing stuff, we were in very different places from now. From that,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I hadn't read any books and all that. But, you know, I was certainly, and I definitely had a different job, and I was certainly, and I was still in school.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there was sort of a value in a lot of the early conversations we were having because I really didn't know if people would take me seriously, because I can't do things the standardized way academically. I just really, mm-hmm, I'm not good at it. And so I was, you know, I'm just like, maybe just if I have interesting ideas, it'll carry the day. And I do still, you know, I'm diminishing myself to some extent, but I still know, yeah, I kind of got lucky timing wise. But
well,
everybody who's
anybody who gets
timing,
anywhere.
Right, like, yeah, that's just like, there's, you can't, that's not a me thing, that's an everybody thing, you know? So, it's just something to, it's not something that's specific to my situation. You have physically frozen for a moment, and I'm sure you're going to come back in a second.
But you also have to...
There we go.
Okay.
See, I knew that was going to happen. You're going to come back in the middle of a sentence. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said that, like, you do have to have something as well. And I think you do have something.
Yeah. I didn't mean to turn this into a just and compliment time, though. Because, like, I mean, not just that. Because it's at a certain point, that is kind of what this thing that I still do for some reason is. But I, you know, I've moved into a different space too, because, like, the language thing, I'm sort of, it's there, it's always there, it's where I came from, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I did as a teacher for 9 years, and it's still where my first things were. But, like, you know, how do you not get, well, maybe you do, but how do you not get frustrated with the language people sometimes, man?
Oh, yeah, it's easy to get frustrated. And, like, you know, that's kind of what our chapter was about, is we need to reckon with the patterns in our field that we keep falling into. because they are reflections of a larger tendency in our cultures to overvalue the individual, to overemphasize the role of merit in success, to create divisions between subfields that are difficult to cross, like, and between fields, right? Because, you know, people who are in the areas of linguistics like I am that necessarily have to communicate with other fields, you know, we have to talk to rhetoric, we have to talk to history, we have to talk to literature, like, and political science, like, we already know that it's not really possible to do your work in a silo. But that's not necessarily the case for, like, your hard, big capital L linguistics people. They feel like maybe they could do it in a silo. Like, we have a real big boy chair, like, strokey beard, think by myself, and I'll come up with something genius kind of syndrome.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I sort of wanted to talk about, because I think that this sort of, I think the fact that I started by talking to other disciplines, you know, made my trajectory different. And I don't even necessarily mean better, I just mean it was necessarily going to be different the same way that you said yours was, because, like, I, you know, it's the tree falls in the forest thing, right? If nobody hears what you say, then did you say it? You know? Yeah. And I'm not saying you have to dilute yourself to the point of, you know, weakening your argument.
Right.
But it's not bad for your argument to be accessible by people who don't know every single thing that you do.
Yeah, actually, it's good if other people can get a sense of what you're saying. And we just tend to underemphasize the importance of community and, like, social learning and social meaning making. You know, everything that we learn about language and learning and, you know, innovation is that it's interactionally achieved. It's socially achieved. Even if, like, somebody can say, I had the idea, like, you go back through their timeline and, you know, there's a lot of pieces of that idea that came up through their community and the way that they interacted with other people. And we just love to pretend that that's not true and that everybody's like Isaac Newton under the tree, you know?
Yeah, the idea just...
I get it. I know.
Yeah, I mean, I tell the stories all the time, and I've told you all the stories about how things came about for me. Like, I wasn't just sitting in a corner and came up with stuff, and I just don't think that that's possible because, like,
yeah.
I think one of the issues with language, and particularly the quote-unquote hard aspects of it, is, like, we understand the way that language interacts with different types of oppression and discrimination, right? But I can understand, and when I say understand, I don't mean empathize, but, like, it's not confusing, where of all methods of oppression and discrimination, language is one where it's much easier for people to divorce it from the people who created it. Because, yeah, like, not that there isn't discrimination based on various types of bodies, but you can't say that someone being discriminated based on their skin tone is not about their body, right? Like, that is right on them, right? Same thing with, yeah, like, size or whatever, right? And I'm not saying these things don't happen, but, like, the argument is different. It's not, that's, yeah, not about them. It's some other nonsense, right? And it's just a different problem. But, yeah, with language, because, and especially written language, it'll be on the page, and you're like, well, it's just letters, and, you know, it's just, you know, there's no people, it's, yeah, just, you know, and to some extent, right, I, like I said, understand, because, like, for example, if I write a book in 1850, like, I'm not there anymore. The language, yeah, is there by itself, and you can go and do research on my, like, life and figure things out. But when you do produce written language, to some extent, you are divorcing it from yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a tough battle to fight that you all are also fighting, because, like, you know, it may be attached to the person who put it there, but it doesn't only belong to the person who put it there. And that is a tightrope, yeah. I found.
People are really resistant to the idea that any form of languaging is also identity work, and that it also does reflect like who you are and where you come from, right? Because we think like, well, with language, you know, you learn it. So some people must have just learned it better than others. And so then I get to judge the people who like either didn't care enough to learn it right, or, you know, didn't have the intelligence to learn it right. And that's just never the case, right? It's not about apathy or intelligence. It's about reflecting important information.
I had a really interesting discussion with my students last night about code switching and translanguaging. These are not language teachers. They're teachers. They're they teach students with disabilities. And so this is obviously right up my alley of like the two things that I think about. Later, the class will get into sort of the intersection of those things. But for the first half of the class, we're mostly just talking about things about language. So talking about code switching and translanguaging, right? And like none of them have ever heard of translanguaging until what I gave them to read, right? Why would you have, right? Just, yeah. If you weren't studying this stuff, it was just not going to come up. And we were really, they were really just trying to understand in the sense that like, so what do you mean? What's the difference? And if they, you know, and so forth. And I think we sort of got to a really interesting place by the end of it where they were having sort of light bulbs and all that. And it was pretty interesting to see. But you have to be open to it for it to make sense, right? Yeah. Because people say, well, what's the problem with saying code switching? I'm like, because like, I don't want to be so prescriptive in another way. Be like, well, you know, never say
Because that's
that.
The phrase they now.
Right. And I'm just like, and I do understand why certain things may be easier to wrap your head around, right? Which is why, like, I used Mike Manna's video about it rather than just giving, I gave him some academic stuff, but, you know, he was breaking down one of the things because
that's
like,
that's
the whole point. And they said they had to watch it a few times. Like, that's why it's good that it's a 15-minute video. You can just watch it a few times, right? Whereas, like, I'm not reading an academic article like 12 times. Right. just fall asleep with my head on the computer. But, you know, which I've done before. And I think so this need to communicate with broader audiences, like, I do think, and this is it's not just language, it's academia in general, right? And then I don't understand how, because, let me back up so the sentence actually makes sense. Because you'll see academics speak publicly, right? And I don't necessarily even mean like CNN or that level, but I also mean the level between a conference, which is not really public. Like there's like six people, but
and you the level paid between, out your butt for it,
right? Exactly, right. And like full, you know, Cornell West level or something like that, right? But the level in between, sort of where I'm at with like books that people can read. You know, I want that is not often seen as a lane for academics. They only basically see like, I'm going to stay in my corner or there's some who end up being like, I'm going to be so prominent that I'll be like a commentator or something. I'm not saying that's a goal for that many people, but it happens to a few of us.
Yeah.
And I think that there should be more exploration of how to potentially reach a sort of middle level, because that I think is a much more, I don't know if it's more sustainable than the like superstar level, but there's just no like, you can't expect that to happen, right? But like, you know, I get really frustrated is what I'm saying with academics sometimes when they don't even consider trying to, and I know some have tried and not succeeded, so I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who don't even get, they're like, no, I don't think I could even do it. I'm just like, why don't you try? You know, you could try to write for
it. What if people got to hear about all the amazing things that you know?
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But I think a lot of it's programs, though. The programs are not teaching people these options, right?
SciComm is like, you know, we have Gretchen McCullough in linguistics who's like, and Lauren Gaughan, they're trying to like really push the SciComm skills. For people, and they have grants now that they can give. That's really nice. And we have like Mike Manna who does the YouTube stuff, and like Nicole Holliday often has things in print publications, like in, you know, New York Times or local, more local things, you know. And who else? Megan, will do it. And so that is nice, but it would be good to see more. Cause it's amazing how much people don't know. You know, like I just heard a friend, like a new friend that I'm, you know, like my kid's friend's parent, say that Spanglish isn't real. And I was like, oh no. And so I had to like stop everything. And I was like, oh right. Like these things don't reach people.
Yeah, because there's two responses. There's like, well, technically, there's one larger language.
Like, okay, kind of. Yeah. But also, right? Like, it's legitimate when people are mixing.
Right. Right, because, like, you'd be like, well, is it, well, what is real? I mean, right, because you could go really far in the other direction and just be like, you know, technically nothing is real, right? Or, you know, but that's not what they meant. This is, we were talking, specifically Spanglish is one of the things we were talking about in the class yesterday, right? And it's like, oh, so if I use Spanglish, I'm like, you know, I don't really care what you call it, right? Like, call it whatever you want to. It's just like, if you are mixing things together, it's legitimate. That's the point, right?
Yeah. And you're demonstrating that you have, like, competency in two languages, because you can't do it if you don't really know both languages.
Right. So, like, yeah, and there's – and it's even, like, people who I respect who know a lot about something, they don't know about this thing. And, like, that's not necessarily their fault, right? You know, I would not go – if I don't know something, I don't go out of my way to say derogatory things like that. I just, you know, but then again.
Right. Which is like, confidence.
Yeah, you know, and
oh,
I don't
language.
Mean.
What do you mean?
When I was like 20, I would do that, but I was 20. You know, the just like, oh, I know this. I know this. You know, like things that people, the pop science stuff, like the 10% of your brain stuff, right? Like that sort of thing. You're like, oh, that's true. You know, and then it's just simple stuff. Like
people have heard it a million times, they think it's real.
Right. And then there's things where I'm like, where I said 20 minutes ago about like, I agree with the sentiment of what you're saying, but you're saying it so incorrectly that it's not going to help us. Right.
Yeah.
Because for people, especially people trying to push progressive or, you know, left values, right, they're going to be on us if we get anything wrong. So you really, like, the people on the other side do not care if they're wrong. So that's not going to, doesn't matter to them. They're going to say stuff, right? And if we are trying to make our points, we need to be on the ball. And it's just,
we need to have our ducks in a row.
Right. And so, like, when people say things that are either technically true or emotionally true but are missing the point, I don't want to get on people's cases because then it looks like I'm being a scold, and people also sometimes misunderstand and thinking I'm coming from another direction, right? And then I have to over-explain, and I'm just like, this is why I'm not having these social media arguments anymore. I'm just going to write my books. You know, because, like, for example, someone saying, I saw someone, which is like the, I don't even know why I still have Facebook at this point. I think it's just for pictures, right? Because, like, I don't even know what's happening over there. I just use it because it's basically Instagram. I just post my pictures and it goes to Facebook, right? So, but then when I go on there, everything is like someone's reel, which is like a picture that they took of someone else's tweet from some random time 6 months ago that I'm just like, why don't you write it?
It's such a mess.
And then it'll be like, it'll say something like average rent this at this time. I'm like, you can't use average because the thing about you need to say median, and I understand that you are sort of correct, but if you say that, they're going
to point like median out. Is a kind of average, but people don't think of it when they hear average, so you have to be careful.
Right. And I'm just like, no, it's because like, and it'd be like the average salary. And I'm like, yeah, you're doing what they do, because when Amazon was trying to come to Queens, they were like, the average salary will be this. And I'm like, yeah. Because there'll be like two guys making $2 million, right? So, and I'm just like, but then like, so she's not worth the time for me. And I have enough of a, you know, literary platform to make my points that I have just sort of divested myself from trying to do that, which is a little sad because I enjoyed those tussles sometimes.
But they can be counterproductive. And like, if you do go on Twitter, you'll notice that like, I'm not getting in one-on-one fights anymore. Cause it is, it is kind of counterproductive, right? It's giving energy to the jerks.
Yeah, well, it's that old phrase. Wise man said never argue with fools because people just can't tell who is who, right? So, you know, yeah. It's just, because like from the outside,
that's
you're
exactly
like,
it.
It's really hard because you're not going to see the necessarily see the beginning. Where did this start? You know, yeah. I still, for some reason, I guess just as like, I still have the account in this teacher's group and like something will happen and they're like, we need to go gang up and fight them. I'm like, do you?
Right. What's it going to do, actually?
Right, I'm sure you'll feel better for a second, but yeah. they're not going to, like, stop. So, you know, it's one thing if it's, like, a retweet this for visibility. That's a different thing. But, like, you know, right. It's still, like, you're not – my friend who I must have told you about years ago who has – oh, I didn't even tell you the follow-up to the story. My friend who I told you who, like, didn't – take the bar and whatever, and just like things were floundering. He got another job and he quit the job because he likes to do impulsive things like that. And you know, he just still spends his time on Facebook, of all places, Facebook, having arguments with nobody, right? Like paragraphs.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I remember doing that in 2010 because
yeah.
I had nothing to do.
What if you put that somewhere? Somewhere real.
Because I had nothing to do. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, I would go, I had like a part-time job and nothing to do, especially not intellectually. Yeah. So I'd be like, I guess I'm just going to win this argument. And I remember sitting on my BlackBerry, yes, waiting for the person to send their volley back across the tennis court of Facebook. So I could be like,
oh my God.
It's time. I'm so
ready.
Exactly. And like, I believe that I was broadly right, but I'm sure that I'm sure it's still out there. If I go back in my account, I'm not going to do that. But like, you know,
right.
I'm sure I wasn't using citations, you know, I wasn't, it was just mostly emotional back and forth. I remember some of the arguments too. They just got intense, right? And I was just
I remember that. I think when I was an undergrad, that's what I was doing. Imagine the amazing grades I could have had if I wasn't doing that. But
yeah, I could have had like an actual job instead of the nothing I was doing in 2000. I had a job, but I was not really doing anything because I was too invested in this sort of nonsense.
Yeah.
And
oh, I was dog wrangling on top of the Facebook arguments. That was my job.
Right. And you know, I'm not saying diss these, but like, I was not. I barely had enough money to cover my rent. Right. And I was just like, but. I must with this, you know, and
someone is wrong on the internet.
Exactly. That thing. Someone is wrong on the internet. And then my wife showed me that cartoon. She showed me that several times.
You're like, oh no, it's me.
It's like, you know, and you got to let it. It's just hard to let it go because like I realized once I stopped doing that, that it was filling a space in my head and heart or whatever you want to call it. That I now have things to fill with.
Yeah, right.
How much I didn't have, so.
Yeah, it's this kind of psychological thing where, like, you might not be doing something that's actually productive, but because you're, like, hard and, like, you know, putting together these arguments and, like, typing them out, you feel like you've done something. But really all you did was fight with somebody. And so, you know, now that we do have outlets to put those arguments somewhere that like people will read them and where they might be more fleshed out and better, stated in a more, you know, engaging way, then we get to do that. And that's very nice for us that we have those options.
Yeah. I remember one of the things I've learned in various, you know, treatment and diagnosis, ADHD and all that, and figuring things out about myself and writing stuff more professionally, not professionally in a, like a register sense, but I mean, in the sense that it's going to be read by people. And like, I know it's going to be read by people is like you said, you get to put the arguments together, you get to construct them, you get to think through things, you know, I've got to be sort of, I always wonder if when I submit these books and chapters to places that they're going to be wholesale rejected. And like, I've had many articles rejected, but I've never had a chapter or a book rejected. I had one chapter rejected because somebody asked me to do it, and I was like, I don't know what this is, man. He's like, come on, write for my thing. And then I wrote it, and he's like, he didn't say I don't like this. He's, but I was just like, well, why you asked me to do it then?
So annoying.
Right. It's just like, you asked me, I don't have any time, so I did it. And he was like, this seems rushed. I'm like, does it?
Yeah, did I not tell you?
So anyway, my son wakes up at 5:55 with me every day, so.
Yeah, that's when her okay to wake light turns green.
We have one of those. He doesn't listen. He wakes up at like 4:50, so he'll just bark and leave. And then I'm just like, fine. So I'm just like, come lay down here, because I'm not getting up. So he always spends like the last 45 minutes of the night with us. So then when my alarm goes off, he's like,
party time.
Right. He spins out of bed and like, he gets all bossy. He says, you know, I'm like, wait, don't forget your water bottle, because he's got these big water bottles. He goes, you get it. And I'm like, no.
She does that to me too. Yeah. You're 4 years old. You can do things for yourself.
Right. And he's not asking. He says, you get it. And I'm like, no.
You do it.
No. What were we talking about? So.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Diagnoses. Okay. Yeah. I was talking about the way it feels to like, there's sort of a heat I feel when I get into those sort of more emotionally charged arguments. That doesn't happen that often anymore. And like, what I realize is that since I've gone through some treatment and figured some things out, when I happen to get into one of those things, I feel that more intensely, because it's a contrast to how I feel regularly, which is not that. And I think part of the reason I did it all the time is that I didn't even notice that feeling, because I always felt that way. So I was just like on one all the time. And so it's just like, I might as well stay on
activated.
One. Yeah. And now, you know, I'm just like, oh, this is not healthy to feel like this all of the time. I'm just thinking back like, man, I must have felt absolutely not in control at any time. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not great. But these are the things you learn.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I stopped doing the one-on-one fights, right? Because, yeah, that like activation, it's not necessarily that productive. The best thing, and I'll probably disagree with this, you know, 2 years from now, but the best thing right now that I think that I can do is take screenshots of, like, you know, damaging ideologies, damaging rhetoric, and just say what I think about that and not, like, not get involved in discussions, right? Talk about, not to. And the other reason why that's where I'm at right now is that, like, I have a toddler and a baby. I have no time to sit there and go back and forth with people. It is simply not going to happen. So, and I think parenthood probably does that, right? Like, when I was really getting in fights all the time, it was when Bean was a newborn and she was like strapped to my chest half the time, and I could use my phone more because she was just sleeping all the time. Then she got more large and more demanding. It just wasn't happening as much.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Obviously, he wasn't stuck in my chest as often, but also, like, not only was he so small that he couldn't really go anywhere, but, like, we couldn't go anywhere. Right? Like, nobody could go anywhere.
We were all stuck inside, so. you know, we both had these pandemic babies.
or slightly before, but, like, but they were being raised, you know? And, like, it's true, all that time I told you about is when he was, you know, bigger. He was in daycare, but he was bigger, and I was looking for the job stuff, and I was focusing on all of that, and I, you know, the sort of immediate keep this child alive fear went away, because, like, at a certain point, you realize you're not going to break them, but, like, it takes a while to realize that, but then I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Once you've engineered their environment for, like, the really bad stuff, then you're good.
Yeah, and, you know, the closest I ever got to anything like that is, you know, I didn't put the lock on the stroller one time when we were by the water, and like it started rolling. It didn't get it. It feels like it wasn't that close to the water, right? Right. It feels like it was close to the water.
For you, in the moment.
Yeah. It was probably like 15 feet away, but so I was like, oh, it's right there. And it was probably like 2 feet away from me. So, but, the things you think. Yeah. And I think that now that's sad that there's people with parents who still do this, right? It's just people.
I know.
I mean, most of us have parents, but I mean, people with children.
People who are parents.
Right. And I'm just like, are you bringing this energy home? You know?
That's a great question. Yeah.
Because
that sounds awful for the kids. That, like, you're not fun to be around when you're in that state.
Right. And just to be agitated and to be agitated, but like, again, emotionally, I don't, like you said, activated, because like, you can take that and put it somewhere, right? Yeah. I'm always hyped. Like, I don't really have a chill mode. It's just that I can use it for things now. And I have a job that engages me a lot. And it's not necessarily, I don't know, I took the risk when I applied to the job of like, I had gotten diagnosed a few months earlier. I didn't tell the job that I had because I had had some issues with that job. And that's why I got the diagnosis, because I was just like, some of these things, I cannot figure out why I'm doing them, right? I just, in retrospect, I wrote about this in my dissertation, and it's in the book that I'm, the second book I'm working on now, which I just got literally while you were away, got a cover proof of, so that's cool. Like while you were away, like in the, like 10 minutes.
Wow. Amazing. And
the, what was I saying? So anyway, the diagnosis story is that like, I was making all these mistakes at work, right? Little mistakes, because everybody went lockdown, and our job was to develop training materials for the city. We had computers, right? They were going to send those computers, but we had laptops, and you can teach a class virtually. So that's fine, except the city, because of the work that we did, these were workers who worked with important data, so they wouldn't let them use their personal computers for work, which I understand. The problem is it took them 65 years to give everybody computers with the city.
Yeah.
Except, like, the students got them pretty fast. Not that it was a great organization, but, Chromebooks are pretty easy to send out, right? But The workers, it took them a long time, and it was like, you can't really do city work on a Chromebook because it's not, you can't save anything on a Chromebook. It's basically a disk of internet. And so they couldn't do class. So we couldn't do class. No students. So our bosses were panicking. This is all of this stuff I realized in retrospect. And they were like, so look, it's going to be a while. Here are some old projects that you all can edit, because these were all systems and the systems would get outdated. Right? Well, these were things we would do when we had nothing to do. But that was all we were doing, was stuff. And like, this is when I was talking to you and we were all locked in and my articles were starting to do stuff. And I was focused on all the racial stuff that was going on. And I just didn't care, I think is the thing. And I would do my work, but I could not make myself care. Like, I could not. Because I also knew they were giving not just me, but all of us just busy work. Right?
Yeah.
If they'd been honest and said that, and be like, look, we got to justify our salaries for now. Just do this.
Yeah.
Right. But they were like, this is very important. And they would get mad when there were mistakes. I'm like, I'm just like, it literally doesn't matter. Like it's just okay.
Right.
And so I just will try to focus. And I almost lost my job. I saved my job. And then that was troublesome. And then then they said we're going back to the office, and I didn't really care that much because like he was in daycare by then. It was only a couple of days a week. That wasn't the issue. It was more like I realized that I was stressed out about, I thought, I didn't know why. Right? Yeah, and it wasn't even COVID because like, I was right to somebody to put the mask. It's not that. I realized I didn't want to be in the office with my fucking coworkers. Like those particular people, not people, just those people. Right. And the particular physical environment of my office was like, it was like open office and all this stuff. Right. And it's just like lots of distractions. And I finally went and got the evaluation and realized all this stuff. And then since then, as I figured a lot of things out, a lot of things that I was struggling through, I don't have to struggle through anymore. And I said all this to say that when I applied for this job, they set up a little thing that says, like, if you have any accommodations, this is a virtual interview, just because of COVID, because the company has offices all over the country, so everything's going to be virtual anyway. Yeah, there's an office here, and I go sometimes, but, like, the people I was being interviewed by were all over the country. And they said, if you have any accommodations for the interview, whatever. Like, they all say that, but I was like, maybe I'll actually ask.
Yeah.
And I was like, we'll see, because mostly in the sense of, like, we'll see how they react. Now, react in the sense that, like, if I ask for something, they're not going to say no in the interview.
Yeah.
But, like, see if it's an issue in general, and I brought it up, and I got the job, and then it took a while in the sense of my own comfort after having that bad last job, because I just be like, if I screw up, what's going to happen? But I finally got into the place where I'm able to do the work I do well, and it's not just like in spite of the things, because I now understand the things, but I understand the ways that I succeed are often because of the way I see the world differently. And that wasn't the case before, or at least it wasn't seen that way by my supervisors.
Right.
So that I can't go back now. Right. Like this.
Can't go back
to the other side of the fence where that isn't the case. And,
well, this is where our old and, you know, pervasive continually concept of what success is, who can succeed, that is all built on a bunch of assumptions about how the environment should be engineered for people, right? Like, we have this idea that, like, the truly worthy will sit down in their big armchair and they'll stroke their beard and they'll make a big difference just on the basis of their own genius or whatever. And that is simply only rewarding a particular type of person while also ignoring the ways that they got where they were. Right. And what it does is it makes us not take care of the minds that are around us that are absolutely worthy of resources and of having the right environment so that they can do the best that they can do. Right. Like, you know, some people can't be in, like, an open plan environment just doing busy work. It just doesn't work. And that doesn't, you know, that means that we shouldn't make them stay there. We should come up with ways for somebody like you to do the things that you do, because those things are really crucial. We need your work.
The funny thing is that I actually do have an armchair at work.
Well, you know, I'm sitting in an armchair right now. Okay. It's a metaphor.
Yeah, but it's just funny because there's a birthing room, or, like, not birthing. That would be weird. The feeding, right? Yeah. But there's no women with children. So there's no need for the room right now. Right.
Yeah.
And if I found out it was going to occur, I'd put it back in the room, but I would have some notice. Takes a while. Right. And then they have to.
Somebody has to go on mat leave first.
Right. They have to tell everybody they're going away. They have to go away. They have to come back and choose. And also, like, they don't make us go in. I go in because I get bored at home. So, like, they also have to be one of the few people who would actually choose to come in often. Right.
Right.
So,
and if I had a newborn, there's no way I was going in.
So, you know, I got time, which is to say, like, we moved offices on the same floor last year. And it was just sort of in the little, like, what is this room? And I found that's what it was. And I used to just go sit in there and hang out sometimes. And then, when they moved offices, I said, I'm just going to take this chair. Because I'm the only one who goes there all the time. I'm like, no, this is my chair. And so I just have this little, you know, set up in a corner where nobody can see me. I put my diploma up in there because there's not a lot of room in my apartment. And, you know, it's fun. I feel like a, you know, important person. But I had to get to that point.
I gotta do that. I have so much wall space here. And I need to put my diplomas up.
Yeah, I don't know where my master's is, but I don't really care about it. It's in a, like, safe closet or something like that. But the thing that I use is the doctorate, right? And like I said, it's cool to have in the office. We're finishing touches of buying a house, but, like, I don't want to take it up there. Because it is likely that we will put it, you know, I'll probably work from the dining area because it's got light. And, like, why am I going to put my diploma in the dining area? It's just silly. So it's just, like, why is that there? And so, but, like, yeah. Because I think, and one of the points of the book I'm working on is to show the ways we figured out how to succeed, and we're reflecting on what could have allowed us to succeed more easily in school. Because the book is interviews with people who succeeded. Define succeed how you want. But this is a book about school, so it means, you know, degrees, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, like, we can define success in many ways, but if the book is about K-12, then if you graduated, you succeeded, right? So, like, it's not that complicated. It's why so many of us with various neurodivergences are good at go to school and we keep getting degrees, because it's a pretty easy marker of success, right? So anyway, we're talking about that. And, you know, the book isn't about work. Work comes up, but it's about our adolescence. And, you know, I hope that it gives people, I do think sometimes, you know, I said this in my last episode, you know, the online neurodivergent discourse can be counterproductive sometimes. because for many reasons, people can be too online, you know. Yeah.
There's just a lot happening there, and like everybody has a different take.
Right. And there are some times when I'm just like, look, I do understand that these things can be hard for us, but like, we can't only be talking about that all of the time. Like, we cannot.
Yeah.
Right? We can't. We literally can't only be talking about that. And it's not, I'm not trying to be all like, you know, get over yourself or whatever. I clearly talk about things that have been challenging for me, but like, sometimes I'm just like, look. It's when people say things like, why would people expect me to ever be on time for something? I'm like, look, you have to, sometimes things are going to occur at a time.
Yeah.
People shouldn't be like furious at you, but like, it is not an unreasonable expectation for you to sometimes be on time for things. There are a lot of
alarms. Well, yeah. Right, that's the thing, is like, maybe you have time blindness, maybe, you know, you have something that's preventing you from just you and your brain handling it, but like, we have devices, you have to come up with some mechanisms that will help you, like external helps, because that's part of living in a community.
Yeah, it's the two boats in the helicopter thing, you know, the thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, sometimes you're like, there's thing you can do the
you,
thing.
You have to use the tools that are available to you, right?
Right. And so, and I understand that everybody has the same access, the same tools, etc. So I'm not trying to pretend that there aren't differences and so forth, right? But it does. I mean, it literally doesn't cost you anything to use the alarm on your phone or whatever, right? Like that's not the you're not paying $100 for that. I mean, maybe the phone, but you know what I'm saying. So anyway, I just sort of like, especially because like, when I get diagnosed when I was 35. A lot of people, especially when they're not people of color, got diagnosed when they were kids. I'm like, I don't know, man. I figured some of this stuff out.
Yeah.
So I just get mad sometimes, but I'm just like, I know I'm not being fair, but I'm just like.
There's a privilege associated with information, right? Like knowing what kind of tools you can and should be using. So, and that's the thing, is like, we always want to give grace to people when they're figuring it out, but we do need you to like eventually do figure it out.
Right. And there are people I've spoken to who, you know, have the money and, you know, won't go to try a therapist. And I'm just like, all right, well, look, I can't fix this for you. So. I don't know what you want me to do.
Sure.
And those people don't have money. I'm not talking about them.
Yeah, right.
That's not who I'm talking about. Anyway, I know we have to do our jobs. So it's work, right? I don't have to. My son is off playing in the playground. That's what they do in the morning at school. They play in the playground. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. He has a scooter now. Which is all he wants to do. Scooter.
That is great.
But yeah, it was great catching up. We gotta make sure that next time, you know, we line up the Bay Area situation and we can figure it out. But yes, Dr. Green, so nice to actually hear from you again. I'm glad I don't know, you just showed up when I was looking on the rare times I'm
just
on
popped
there.
Up.
Yeah, and you know, the algorithm brought us back into the same circles again.
That's the wonderful thing about it, isn't it? There's a lot of bad things about it, but that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know what the algorithm is doing on Facebook right now. So I'm just like... It's like all ads. It's just all ads now, though.
Oh, yeah. Like, I only go on Facebook to look at my local town thing, which makes me mad enough as it is. So the, like, private page just for my town. I live in a small rural town now. And so there's, like, a lot of stuff. Like, our school district doesn't have enough kids in it, so we take kids from the neighboring districts, and there's some parents who think that that's very wrong. And so they're, like, always talking about outsiders, and it just gets so mad. Like, what do you mean outsiders? They live 10 minutes away.
It doesn't have enough kids in it. What an interesting thing for a school district to have.
I know. Well, and we can scam a little bit of money out of the county if we allow kids from other districts to attend. So it's like one of the richer school districts, not necessarily because of, like, I don't know. It's all, you know how school districts are. Like, it's the high property values and the taxes and things that go into it. But then it's also this other system that, like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around, where we get extra money from the government for letting kids from the next, like, less fortunate district come over. So, like, it feels kind of like school vouchers without school vouchers. Like, I'm struggling with it.
Well, yeah, I'm about to have to deal with that at a different school district when I move over there. So,
right. Well, because I was like, yeah, we're going to use the public school district. It's going to be so great. And then it turns out that they're, like, doing the scamming that other, like, the private schools are doing also.
Sometimes I think that people would like to go to public school so that they can say that they're going to public schools, but that they still want to do the same thing that they're doing.
But they don't want it to work the way public schools are supposed to work.
Wait, they just want to be able to say, I'm a public school parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So virtuous, right?
Yep.
But, like, yeah, what are you actually doing, though? Like, it's still, we're still redlined all the hell. Like, what do you mean?
Great. Well, that's another topic.
Yeah, right.
So you have fun dealing with that, and I will talk to you again, hopefully sooner than last time.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.